HubZero.org, a platform for scientific collaboration.
So the next speaker on the agenda is Ann-Christine Catlin. She was going to be here today to talk about hub databases, and unfortunately she got called away on a family emergency. So I'm very sorry about that, but I'll just step in myself and do the best I can, because I think you're going to really love what you see here, and I wanted to make sure that it didn't just drop off the schedule. So bear with me as I try to present her work as best I can. So Ann-Christine's talk, she's done a lot of work with her team in the last few years about building databases on the hub. And what do I mean by that? You could look at this slide one of two ways. You could either say that this is sort of the requirements that she was faced with when she was trying to build these databases, or you could say these are the capabilities of the toolkit that she's developed, right? And that's the reality of it today. She's focused on storage, preservation, and access. And librarians use those terms, and I think Ann-Christine understands what they mean in terms of making data stored, backed up, and accessible in a very easy-to-use manner. This data is not only field data that comes from sites, might be out in the field measuring, you know, water quality, or from a machine in a lab that's pumping out data. So there's field data and lab data that comes in more or less automatically. There are also data sets that come in from researchers that are being captured into repositories. She has different methods for collection, including web forms and spreadsheets and more automatic feeds. And she's built a really feature-rich environment, which I'm going to show you in just a second. And in doing all of that, she kept in mind things like access control, data security, backup tracking, and auditing. So anyway, that's the idea. Let me get you into it. There are four different hubs right now that have this database technology, and I can show you a few of them. One is the Earthquake Engineering Simulation Network, NEIS. And this is, they have 10 databases with earthquake engineering related data on NEIS. I'll show you one of them. There's also a Cancer Care Engineering, which actually the Cancer Care Engineering Hub is almost a gigantic database. They have two large sections, one on colorectal cancer and another one on thymic cancer. But there's really not just two databases. There's a lot of different data and many different tables that make up those gigantic databases. There's another database on PharmaHub that deals with pharmaceuticals. NPTI and the FDA got together and produced an excipients knowledge base. This is kind of a pre-competitive thing. If you're going to manufacture pharmaceuticals, most of the companies put all their money in the active ingredient. But that active ingredient's got to get into somebody's stomach somehow, or into their arm or something, somehow. And so the inert ingredients that go into making a pharmaceutical are the excipients. And a lot of times, you know, that's not where the action is. So it actually helps people to pool together their resources and share that excipient database, so that when they go to manufacture a pill, they're all working off the same knowledge base of monocrystalline cellulose and materials like that that make up the pill. And then they put all of their special differential research in the active ingredients. So you can explore lots of different excipient types and lots and vendors and so forth on PharmaHub. And then finally on IndianaCTSI.org, which is run at IU, and they have a Camp Calcium database, which is calcium research over the years. So anyway, let me show you a couple of these, kind of fly you through what they look like. Okay, here I am on the NEIS Hub. And if I go under Tools and Resources, I can go into the Databases section, and I can look at all the databases. Again, there are about 10 databases that they've collected with lots of different type of earthquake engineering experiments. If you're interested in the recent Haiti earthquake and you wanted to see what the damage was, you can find that database. Those are the authors. That's the team that collected the information. You can read about their experience. You can even look at the map and kind of see where they collected the data for all the different building sites. But anyway, what you really want to do is get your hands on the data. If you click the big black button, it will take you off to this live database table that you can browse and explore. So this is all the data that they collected. I might be interested in large buildings, buildings with larger than 5,000 square feet, and I can filter down automatically on things that are larger than 5,000 square feet. And I might be interested in masonry wall damage, for example. I'm looking at who had the most severe masonry wall damage, so I can sort that in order of severity, from most to least severe. And now I can actually see the buildings that had the most severe damage, the larger buildings, and kind of browse them. I can also see it on a map in case I want to geolocate that, because there's latitude, longitude tags. So I can look at the map and I can see out of that subset of buildings that I've selected, these are the buildings. In fact, here's one of them, A001. And if I scroll down and find that building again, that's the data for that particular building. I can see the building, and I can also pull up the building plans right there. That's the kind of fluid exploration of data. You know, it's not downloading a zip file. It's not downloading a spreadsheet. It's not getting some binary gobbledygook that takes you, you know, days to kind of make sense of. It's a database, a live database that you can find on a hub and you can explore without having to have a PhD, and making that data really accessible to other people. Let me show you another example from IndianaCTSI.org, the Camp Calcium database. And again, you'll start to see the pattern. So here's this Camp Calcium database. Connie Weaver at Purdue did a lot of this research. They've had kids come, and they have these camps every year, and they look at all these different questions. You can see in this database the key questions. You can look at the do boys absorb calcium as much as girls? What about Asians? There are all these different studies that they've done, and you can click to go right to the list of publications. In this case, there's one publication, and if you click on the title, it'll actually take you to the journal article. So great, you can read about the study that they did and see the findings. But even better than that, if you go to the right, there's a link for view data. And if you click on that, it takes you right to the data that they talk about in that publication. So now instead of having to sift through the publication and look at their graphs, I can grab and do my own graphs. So if I click on charts, it brings up these different graphs of the data, and I can very easily flip between those graphs that you might see in the publication. But even better than that, I can start to play what-if games. So I might be interested in the parathyroid hormone levels. Now, I might be interested in kids that had, you know, greater than 50, so kind of a high level. And I can go back to my plot now and sort of see a subset of that data. These are only the kids that had more than 50 for their parathyroid hormone level. And I can play what-if games like that to kind of subset and explore the data. So if the publication that I was reading didn't have a particular plot, no problem. I don't have to rely on the publication. If I want to try to subset the data and look at different things, I have a chance to do that with this kind of live, interactive data. All right. Now, what Ann-Christine has built is really an end-to-end solution. And as another example, I'll show you PharmaHub.org, their excipients knowledge base. And so far, the two examples I showed you all were related to browsing the data. You bring up this live form, and you know you're browsing. But what Ann-Christine has built is really an end-to-end system. On the one end, there's upload of data. You've got people in clinicians in healthcare that are uploading blood samples and data into the database. You've got new excipients in PharmaHub that are coming online all the time as vendors manufacture them and measure them. So there's an upload process that adds new data into the database so that it's alive and growing. On the other side of it, there's also analysis capabilities. So it's not enough just to kind of sift and filter and sort and search the data. You actually sometimes need to do something with it. And in this case, I can show you a demo where we can not only sift the data, but actually apply a simulation tool. That's what the hub is really good at. We can apply tools to do the data analysis. Hub Zero has this whole capability for building and deploying these kinds of analysis tools. And now with the data, we can actually link the tools and the data and use them together. So here I am on PharmaHub. And I find this excipients knowledge base, and again, I click the link. This one's a little more complicated. It's got lots of tables, and there's a contribute thing where you can upload new lots and measurements. Of course, you have to be in the right group, you have the right permissions to upload new measurements. It's only open to the vendors that are doing it. I can also browse different things. I might be interested in the NIR spectra for some of these excipients, and not any old excipients, but I might be interested in monocrystalline cellulose, let's say. So that's what I'm going to use for my tablet. So I'll subset the data to that. And I might be interested in low humidity. So I can, again, sort based on humidity and look at the lowest humidity measurements. And I want to look at the top few of those. I'll grab a few of those, checkmark them. And then I can either download the data by clicking on the earth, or I can click on the gear. If I click on the gear, it takes a tool that's naturally suited to that and fires it up So it's taken the four records that I selected and fit and sent them in to this fitting tool, which does some kind of filtering and fitting operation that actually, you know, takes that input data, does a computation, and shows me the fitting analysis. So to me, that's really where the rubber hits the road, is not only having data and housing it and storing it, but actually exploring it and analyzing it. And I think Hub Zero there has a real advantage in terms of the way that we have end users, you know, people that are in not necessarily the server geeks, not necessarily the people that are on the project, but people out in the world that can create these kinds of tools and upload and deploy them, as you see on all the hubs. All right, now part of this, especially when you're dealing with data, has to do with access controls, because data can be sensitive, and you have to be careful about who's allowed to access the data. And again, across these three different areas, the upload, the browsing, and the analysis, there are access controls all along the way. So for data upload, there may be only certain people that are allowed to upload data in the community. Maybe there are people that are in the clinic taking the blood samples. You don't just want, you know, some guy out on the internet uploading data to corrupt your database. So that can be restricted. The upload forms, for example, can be restricted. You might have a different source of data, a spreadsheet or a file or an instrument. And again, that can be protected so that only that instrument is allowed to upload the data. On the browsing side, you may have some tables that only a few people are allowed to see. There may be sensitive, protected healthcare information, and it's only people on very close to the project are allowed to explore that. There may be a different group of people that sees a little bit smaller subset of that data, but still contains sensitive data. And then there may be tables that are available to the outside world. You can make certain tables available to the public. Anyone can browse that and see the data. So the access control helps on the browsing. And again, on the analysis, same story. Again, with sensitive data, there may be some tools that you are not authorized to run unless you can see that kind of data, and there may be other tools that are open to the general public, perhaps even simpler to use for the general public. So the access controls turns out to be a very important piece of this puzzle and giving people the ability to set their own access controls. On the data collection side, there are different ways of getting the data in. This is a typical data entry form. The thing that's interesting about this to me is that, you know, normally when you're building a database on a university project, you get a bunch of staff or grad students to go off and write the code. But in this particular case, once you've defined the database, once Ann-Christine has a data definition of what the columns are in the database, the web upload form gets generated automatically. So it's a whole lot less work. As you create each new database, you just define the schema and the upload form is created automatically. You can also upload data in spreadsheets because, you know, the one-off thing that I showed you for a database form, that's good when you have like one blood sample in a hospital and you're uploading that one. But if you've got thousands of them, you're not going to sit there on the web all day clicking and clicking. So in that case, you may batch up data. Sometimes researchers batch up their data into a spreadsheet, or they may have a feed coming off of a machine, and you can have spreadsheets like this, and the spreadsheets can be uploaded and automatically ingested and added into the... But again, the schema for the spreadsheet is understood by the database. In fact, you can even download from the database a kind of a template that you can fill in for the spreadsheet data. And then finally, a lot of these researchers that we were seeing working together on NICE and other projects, they have other data that they want to share. On NICE, they have a thing called the Dropbox folder where users can kind of share files. And of course, a lot of you probably use the real Dropbox out in the world that you know, to exchange data. In the new release of Hub Zero I mentioned this morning, we have a new projects capability. And I think for all the rest of the hubs, projects is really where people are going to do this kind of sharing. They'll create a private project, they can upload their files, they can share them within the team, they can clean up the data, and then eventually it'll feed this machine that we're seeing here. All right, now there are a couple of future directions that Ann-Christine's working on. I just want to give you a taste of what's to come. One thing I think is really exciting is this idea of point-and-click database creation. Because up until now, all of the databases that I showed you, number one, Ann-Christine started creating those databases from scratch. Along the way, she built a toolkit, and then we got to a point where as new databases needed to be created, there was less work to do, but there's still coding involved. So for each new database, Ann-Christine would typically sit down with a faculty member and they would say, well, we want our data online. She would, what do you mean by that? What is the data? What are the columns? What are the types? What are the data? Do you have thumbnails? Do you have little previews and graphs and diagrams? And she would figure out with them, help them talk through the schema of their data and how it's connected from table to table. within the database. So she would do all of that. Her grad students would go off and write PHP code and XML code and use the toolkit, and they would create a database. And within a couple of months, they'd have a really nice database online, which is great. But what she's working on now is trying to make that so that anyone can do it without special assistance or grad students, and they can do it in minutes instead of months. So she's got this new way, she calls it Data Store, for end users to define the columns and the properties, to create specific views, to set their own access controls, preview the database, and finally deploy it. And let me show you a little preview of that. This isn't out yet in the open source release. It's very much a work in progress, but this is one of these things that's under active development and just needs a little bit more iteration and testing before we get it packaged for open source. So I have a little demo I can show you. She's been working with the folks on Catalyze Care and a few other hubs. You can click Start a Data Store and just fill in a name and a little description of your data. I actually stole this data set from PIRB, by the way. It's not my data. I feel a little bad about that. But you can define the columns one by one. You can input column names, or you can just start with a spreadsheet. So suppose I have this spreadsheet of data, and I just want that on the web. So I can grab that and click Upload, and it'll parse that and figure out automatically all the different column headings and types by looking at the data. And I could edit that stuff if I want. I can also add new columns into the mix in a very point-and-click fashion. And this is pretty good. I'll just give it a name, Phosphorus Data, and then create the data store table. Now data store is prompting me. It's saying, get the template so you can generate new data. So I can download that spreadsheet file. And what I'll do is pull that into my current directory and just edit it. I'm kind of a VI guy, so I think I dream that way. That's how I dream in VI. Anyway, I'll pull in comma-separated values and edit the header just a little and save all that data. And now I've got a nice file that I can upload back into the hub. So I can choose my file that I just fixed up or maybe pasted some data into. And then I click Upload, and voila, I have a table now. And I can add more tables, and I can set up more bulk data entry. I can create different views. Right now I just have one view, the standard data view. And voila, there's my data from the spreadsheet live on the hub. And now I can do everything else that I showed you before in terms of searching and sorting and filtering. And I really didn't have to do much work, right? A couple of minutes, and I'm up and running. Again, access controls are important here, so I can click on that and find out what the access permissions are and manage those views. And there's even controls down here for setting the administrators and the data entry users and different groups of users that are allowed to do different things for this data store. Oh, yeah, and here's the kicker, because finally when my data set is all ready and published, here's what it looks like or would look like on a hub. So it's got a title, it's got authors, it's got an abstract, and I can click the button, and boom, I can come right to the live data. Of course, if you really wanted to, you could probably download a CSV version or some other, you know, form of the data as well. But the point is, you don't have to. You can very easily find a data set and start exploring it before you actually go to the bother of downloading it and messing with it for your research. So you can try before you buy. Now, the other thing that I'm really excited about is that Ann Christine is now working as part of this PIR project, Purdue University Research Repository, to integrate that database functionality into HubZero projects. And I think, to me, that's a natural marriage, because we have these private project areas where people can upload data files. And, you know, some of these databases have like 10,000 pictures, little thumbnails of the measurements and so forth. And so you need to upload those 10,000 images and store them somewhere. So we have this project area where you can upload your data, maybe multiple spreadsheets, maybe large files, maybe lots of thumbnails or large images. So you can upload that, store it within the project. You can work with people on your project to clean up the data. And then finally, you can stage and preview the data and get it published with a DOI. So what was missing from the demo that I just showed you, we had a database that was up on Catalyze Care, didn't quite have the digital pedigree, didn't have the digital object identifiers and some of the things that we're working with the folks in library science to add for exploration and for the different metadata protocols like OAI, PMH, and so forth that the library folks are bringing to the table. So we can export that data and have other systems recognize it as well. So I think once we get to the point in the very near future where people can create their own databases and they can do that collaboratively and publish them, it'll really be something. So I guess that brings me to the end. Again, Anne Christine's work, I take no credit. I'm just filling in the best I can. She has a whole team of people. I think some of them might be here today, Sudhira. So if people are here, then you can catch up with them and ask some more questions. There are a couple of links online. Anne Christine has some information about DataStore on Catalyzed Care and about the databases that she's created, DataViews in general, on HubZero. So you can follow those links or you can reach out to Anne Christine and her grad students for more information. Thank you. Any questions? Yeah, I'll try my best to answer. Go ahead. Yeah, question is, can you do things like joining tables and aggregating columns? And I think you can. I think for simple databases and the point and click, that you'll be real limited in terms of what you can do. But I know with her database capability, they typically write a little bit, they have like plug-in code that you can write under the hood to do different things. So I think the answer is yes, but you have to write the code under the hood.